Welcome to the show. Today, we're joined once again by Jimmy, a seasoned trader and entrepreneur. Welcome back, Jimmy.
Thank you very much for having me back, Nima. It's great to be back.
Absolutely. Great to see you. Let's dive in. Jimmy, last time we got to know you with a few short questions. Let's dive a little deeper this time with some more quickfire questions. Now, you told us that you joined the brokerage world, or you got into trading by accident, but you had joined a brokerage and that required you to start learning about the industry and really understand the nuances of it. You are also a host of a popular radio show and the curator of your own financial market podcast. How do you balance the media presence with your trading and investment activities?
Interestingly enough, they all kind of gel into one another. So the fact that you're looking at financial markets every day, sometimes all day, sometimes at odd hours, you wake up for the start of Asian session, you are awake for the end of the US session, that kind of constant market participation lent itself for me to be able to comment on markets in the media space, to be able to host a radio show that specifically looks at markets and business and all of those sorts of things, because it's part of my normal day. And even with the podcast, it seemed that it was a right fit for the information that I was already consuming on a daily basis. So it was a natural fit to build that kind of alignment across the media and the financial side of it. And that alignment, I mean, even in the media space, the commentary is financial commentary. It's not it's commentary around political issues. Obviously, there are some political issues that weigh in on the financial side of it, as an example. But having that financial background and living in that financial world, all of these things just became a natural fit.
So you're living, breathing the markets.
That's it.
So how do you unwind in your free time?
By not looking at the markets. And it's strange because you need that. I need that unwinding. When you're looking at markets 5-6 days a week, Asian session starts on a Sunday technically, going into a Monday, you're looking at that until Friday night. Your weekends, you don't really want to be sitting there doing more and more analysis throughout. I think a lot of the market presence and the consistency of being in the market, I need to be able to detach and completely shut off the market side of things or the financial side of things in order to be able to unwind. And oddly enough, when that's been the case, that's when I've had some of the most interesting market-related conversations. So you'll sit down with a client, you'll sit down with a fellow investor, you'll sit down with someone you know, and you'll overhear a conversation that someone's talking about this particular market. Did you see what happened to this and this, a share price during the week? And you would have seen that because you would have been looking at that market and you have your own opinions formulated around it, and you have to resist the urge to get involved in those conversations because you need to de-stress. You need to be able to regroup and regather your thoughts.
Got it. I mean, you're creating your own or curating your own content for your podcast. Do you try to align the content with what is valuable for your trading and what you need, or are you looking for creating content that is more applicable to the masses?
So we create entirely content that is applicable to everybody else. So the value in our content is being able to share our industry knowledge and our expertise and our opinions over how we see things. So when you've looked at certain markets for so many years, you start to understand them more deeply. You understand what drives them. You understand these, and that kind of knowledge builds up and compounds over many, many years. And to have that knowledge sit in one person or two people's heads and just sit there seems like a bit of a waste. So we thought we'd share it with the world. We'd put out our podcast is deliberately structured to be an opinion-based podcast because markets are not factual things. Every market decision, there's some level of opinion to it. The market can go up, it can go down. Your sentiment might say it will go up or might go down, but that is your opinion and your sentiment and your approach to that market.
and just giving people new perspectives on way to approach things and process the information. But, you know, I want to dive deeper in your journey, which is the most probably unconventional journey comparatively to the normal traders, you know, to start with the brokerage and then move into the trading. It would give us some insights into some of these experiences and challenges in terms of resilience and being patient and whatnot within the trading world. But can you tell us about the moment you decided to pursue trading seriously, when you said, okay, this is for me, this is what I want to do with my future?
Let me start with a bit about the brokerage side of it. When you're in that world, and if you're privileged enough, as I was, to find yourself in some of the best brokerages in the world, not in the country, in the world, you start to grow an appreciation for understanding what this product is. Remember in the first chat that you and I had, in the first episode, that we spoke about the fact that trading is a high-risk environment. It's not for everybody. It is something where you have to equip yourself to be able to survive. And we spoke about battle scars, and we spoke about the things that a trader goes through. The other thing around learning about the space is fully understanding and appreciating what it is that we are doing here. It is a financial product, but is unlike any other financial product. The level of risk that comes with a leveraged product, the level of complexity that comes with understanding what it is that you're dealing with. It's very easy to define an asset class, to talk about an asset class, to talk about what a share is, what constitutes a share, how many shares are in issue, or what the shares are trading at, and all of those things. That's one asset class. When you're dealing with something like CFD trading, and again, I credit a lot of where I am to the foundation and the knowledge base that I built up before actively making that transition. That knowledge base spoke to more than one asset class. It spoke to how to deal with different sort of integrations of these asset classes and the interlinking relationships between these asset classes. And I think that makes for a more complex trader, 100%. But I wouldn't have it any other way. I wouldn't have done it any other way. To the point around the pivotal moment, the switch, was when you've gone through that kind of knowledge base as a foundation and you start to look at something from the perspective of seeing what real opportunity looks like. This, the real opportunity that I saw in it was you can, in a country like South Africa where youth unemployment sitting at 60%, 60, and I'm still a member of the South African youth population, to be able to sit there and say, how do I make my situation better? How do I make my generation's situation better? Because the opportunities are not coming out of nowhere. So we have to almost create those opportunities for ourselves. To sit there and see trading and see the potential that it is. It's absolute potential in its purest form. Not to see it as a quick thing or a quick fix or this, the absolute potential of what we spoke about in our first episode when I said a skill set that can never be taken away from you. That for me was the pivotal moment when I realized that that's what you could do with it. And we built the academy that we spoke about as well. And we built that out so that others in the country and in the world that don't have the skill set, that might not have had the educational opportunities, can suddenly acquire something that can fundamentally change their lives, their families' lives, and their communities' lives around them. That is the true power of trading in its essence. That is the true power of participating in the financial markets. It's not this window dressed thing that it's made out to be, that you can make a quick buck, that you can do this, you can do that. This is a skill set that can fundamentally change the lives of people for generations.
Fully agree. Well said. I mean, the way I see it is it can give you a level of freedom, and I don't mean financial freedom. You can reduce the dependencies you have on others for your livelihood. I just need an internet connection and a phone or a tablet, and I can end the skill set, and I can make a living. And even coming from a brokerage perspective, some people ask me, you know, what are you doing? And I think as a broker, you know, we have such a large responsibility because people are coming to us for dependency because they want to achieve goals and obviously build a career or build up, improve their opportunities. And it's actually a blessing. And I don't feel that necessarily all brokerages take that responsibly.
It is taken for granted, not just from a brokerage perspective, but also from a trader's perspective. Because it is exactly as you said, an internet connection, a skill set, and anywhere in the world, it's taken advantage of in the sense that people think, oh, it's easy. One of the first things you and I spoke about in our last chat was to say, what is the biggest misconception? Is that this is the easiest path you can take. Nothing worthwhile ever is that easy. If it were, we'd all be doing it. But taking the time to invest in, excuse the pun, yourself, but also in the markets, you then start to realize that the full potential of this thing is far greater than you could have ever imagined.
With that being said, every trader's journey is unique. Along the way, what do you feel has shaped your trading style the most? Your natural instincts, learned skills, or a mix of both?
Has to be a mix of both. The natural instincts come up to a point, but the skill set and the knowledge that has been acquired then reinforces the decisions that you're then taking.
Do you think that you would have had the same success, more or less success, if you didn't trust your natural instincts and just focus purely on the skill? Or do you feel that having some level of instincts has protected you or helped you?
I think the natural instincts has been a benefit. There have been some trades I've taken where another analyst or another market participant might have read it differently. And inherently, I looked at that trade before I did the analysis and the knowledge and applied the skill set side of it. I looked at it inherently, naturally, and I said, that's a level.
And you had the instinct, said, okay, this trade, I believe in it.
This is what I'm looking at. This is my bias from the get-go.
And did you then try to support that instinct with facts, or did you just go for it?
Both. I've done both. And I've succeeded and failed with both approaches. So we had a conversation in our previous session around technical analysis, fundamental analysis, how to marry all of those sorts of things. And when you're in that trading space and you're making those decisions, you can choose to ignore certain things. You can choose to take your skill set and have it confirm a bias that you had already. And then you start to look for certain signals that might not be there, but you want to see them because you already want to take that position. And that's where you kind of have to have, we've had this conversation as well around the discipline, around the strategy and the approach, is that's where these things all start to come together. Your gut is telling you to do something. When you then analyze the trade from a skill set perspective, are you analyzing it objectively to say the objective answer here is that this is not a trade to take? Or are you doing your skill side of it to confirm an inherent bias that you already had from an instinctive perspective? That's another thing that we have to talk about as investors, as traders, as market participants, is it confirmation bias? Is it independent analysis? How does it all fit in together? And that affects your trading decisions. That affects every single decision you make.
Many traders describe moments when the right tools or resources made all the difference. Can you share how technology like fast execution or platform stability has played a role in your trading evolution?
I think back to times of intense market volatility. Big news events, big market events, big things. If you're in a position, I want to be able to open up my platform knowing that I can get out of that position without any delays, without any lags, without any latency, without any issues from a brokerage that says our platform is down because we didn't maintain our servers or for whatever reason. That level of peace of mind, again, comes back to a separate conversation you and I had around the regulated brokers, the trusted brokers. A broker that's gone through the effort of building out regulation and building out proper technology and solution is a broker that aims to be able to provide the least amount of friction to their client. Now, when you're dealing with conditions of heightened volatility and heightened uncertainty in the markets, the last thing that you need is to log into a platform and have to wait half an hour to be able to access your platform when the news that broke has already moved the market, has already affected your position, has already affected some of your other positions that you might not have even intended to take. So technology, infrastructure, that's where the broker is meant to excel. That's your job. Your primary job as a brokerage is to provide the access to that market and access in a manner that is most efficient, most reliable, and most convenient. Now, those brokerages that choose not to do that, that choose to compromise on that, in the long run, compromise the quality of the clients that they have as part of their businesses. There are brokerages that have elected to spend immense amounts of money into technology, into platform, into infrastructure to ensure that that friction is minimized as much as possible. And it can be the difference maker between a really good trading experience and one that leaves you with a lot of regret.
For, let's say, a first-time trader, do you educate them on trying to identify the broker that is going to provide them this frictionless trading, as you said, or to, you know, allow them to exit and enter the markets easily? Because sometimes this is not so easy to identify when you're doing your research on brokers.
So I think there's a couple of really good things that you need to do as a first-time trader that will save you a lot of the headache. And when you're looking at this entire experience, this trading journey, or this investing journey, especially as a self-managed investor, you have to do your homework. You cannot approach it and say, I'm just going to take whatever's first, whatever's being thrown at me first, because it's very easy to have things put in front of you and say, this is a real... If you're not doing your research and you're not doing your own homework, you're only doing a disservice to yourself, not to anyone else. It's your money at the end of the day. It's your experience. It's your trading journey. It's everything to do with you. And you're only doing a disservice to yourself. Now, from a brokerage perspective, there's brokers that inherently don't want to do things in the best interests of their clients. There's brokers that take the opposite approach and that want to make the client experience as best as humanly possible. Your responsibility to yourself, not to anyone else, to yourself as a trader, as an investor, as a market participant, is to do your own research, to identify what it is you need from a brokerage, and to have a checklist in place. At the end of the day, you are the client. The brokerages need to service you, not the other way around. So when you're looking at a brokerage, is your brokerage adequately regulated? Does your brokerage have the solutions you need? Do they have the product sets that you're looking to participate in? Because a lot of brokers don't offer all of the product sets. Do they have adequate liquidity to offer you that product set? Are they offering you a gray market where you might not be able to participate in that market as freely because there's very little liquidity? Those are things you need to understand before you take the decision to trade or take the decision to select a broker.
Speed is often described as a trader's best friend, especially in volatile markets. In your experience, how does execution speed influence a trader's ability to seize opportunities to avoid losses?
Typically, when you're dealing with trades that require a sensitivity towards speed, it's because there is a limited window of opportunity to take advantage of a certain outcome, of a certain event, of certain conditions. And if you have what we call in the trading world latency and execution lag, you have a situation where I want to take advantage of this opportunity now, but because there's no speed of execution, which is out of my control as the client and is entirely in the broker's control, I now am at a disadvantage on what is looking or on what I'm looking to do. Now, obviously, this comes with different trading styles. There's different trading philosophies you can get into around should you be trading on speed or should you be trading on accuracy? That's a different debate. To say, should you place all of your reliance on speed alone, or do you want to place your reliance on accuracy and other factors that a brokerage is able to provide? Because when you start to truly appreciate and understand what's happening here, you can start to do things like place your trading orders prior to a market movement happening and rely on what we spoke about with the broker executing that in a timely manner. So that takes your speed element out of the equation. But because you have a reliable brokerage partner, you're then able to have trust in the fact that my order will be executed upon. So I think it's nice to have speed of execution for instant execution and for those immediate opportunities as they present themselves. But it's even better to have a brokerage that gives you a more rounded solution.
Absolutely. There's no doubt about that. I mean, I look at it just, I compare a brokerage to a car. And, you know, you want a fast car, but at the same time, I also want stability.
I want to get there.
Yeah, I want to get there, and I need the tires, and there's a well-rounded approach that we need to look at. But definitely, speed is an important element, particularly for people doing scalping and these type of strategies. And at XNS, we emphasize the importance of fast execution to help the traders stay ahead. But in your opinion, how does having access to lightning fast execution tools impact a trader's confidence in their strategy? So case in point, the scalper as an example.
From a scalper's perspective, that's a key component of that strategy is speed, is execution, is the ability to be in and out at a moment's notice, is the ability to, when I look at a brokerage like XNES or any other brokerage, are they providing me with tick data? Because more often than not, that's the kind of data that I'm looking at. I'm not looking at monthly data. I'm looking down at very granular information. And if that information is filtering through with a certain element of latency, I have to account for that as a trader. And when that information hits my screen versus when it was put out, that can drastically affect the kind of trade and the kind of position I take, especially if I'm doing this on a consistent basis. Part of the scalping strategy is frequency in the market. It's not duration in the market. And so that requires reliable speed, reliable execution, reliable and stable platform solutions, which again, still comes back to the fundamental conversation that we had about, are you dealing with a broker you can trust, that you can depend on? Because a broker can offer you 200% the speed of a normal brokerage, and that's all great and lovely. How long can they maintain that and be consistent in that? We spoke about discipline in our first chat from an individual point of view. From a brokerage point of view, we need to speak about consistency. Is the broker going to be reliable? Is the broker going to be consistent in what they are offering you so that you can execute on your trading strategy? If your broker doesn't give you that level of comfort and peace of mind, you should probably get a regulated.
There you go. Speed and stability are two critical elements in trading. In your experience, how have you had to adapt your trading strategy in volatile markets, especially when execution speed could be the difference between a missed opportunity and a profitable trade?
It's been, again, the battle scars, the learning curves. You get it wrong. Maybe you get it right, but you get it wrong again. And those experiences have taught you, at least they've taught me, how to approach the market, how to depend on certain things from a brokerage, how to know that I can go to bed and sleep knowing that my brokerage will execute on that order that I placed if I need to. If I wake up in the middle of the night, news is broken, I happen to be looking at a market and I happen to want to execute, I have the confidence to know that my execution partner is readily available to take on that decision. I don't want the inconvenience of having to say, it's going to be another 30 minutes before they take my order, I've missed the opportunity. That just dissuades you from participating in the markets in general. But more so, I think it should dissuade you from dealing with that particular participant.
True. But I mean, even with the execution, it could be executed on time, but with a lot of slippage and type of things. And for me, the execution, it's not just as black and white. It's okay, execute it, but what price are you going to execute
it at? So, but that again speaks to the fundamental problem. And I keep bringing it back to the regulation problem because that's where a brokerage starts, right? If a brokerage has the regulation in place, then they know what maximum slippage to apply to a market, what is fair market slippage, what is fair trading conditions, what is out-of-hours pricing on a market that seems fair from a risk perspective. They're incentivized as a brokerage to act in the best interests of their clients. And so then you've got a brokerage that is incentivized to give you those trading conditions, to give you the good slippage. Sometimes you even find a brokerage that says there was X amount of slippage on the market, we will take some of that hit for you and we'll give you only this amount of slippage because that's our promise to you as a client. And that's why it's fundamentally important when you're finding that good broker to find a broker that has those values, that has those principles.
You mentioned, Jimmy, in relation to these battle scars that you've acquired over the years. So looking back at your journey so far, what is one lesson or realization about trading that has really stuck with you? What is the deepest scar, let's say?
I would say that it's not for everyone. When we spoke about the misconceptions in the first episode, I mentioned that trading is not easy. That was my one-liner for that. This, it's not for everyone, is understanding that one of the other misconceptions that comes with trading is that, oh, we can just get in, get out, it's just a market and all of that. Inherently, the level of risk and sophistication, this is a complex product. This is not a simple product that is it's made out to be in the market where people will say, oh, these are the only things you need to understand about it. It is not.
A very high maintenance product.
It is an exceptionally complex financial product that is not for everyone. That is not to say that people out there are in any way stupid or not as smart. It is not a reflection on people. This is a complicated product. Now, it might not sound complicated when Nima and Jimmy speak about it because we might have been able to simplify certain aspects of the product. But let's be very clear, this is a complex financial product. And as a result of that, that's why regulatory environments like ESMA, like the FCA, like ASIC, like DIFC are all imposing leverage restrictions because it is a complex product. Not because they want to be party poopers or because they don't want brokerages to succeed or because they don't want traders to make money. It is because fundamentally, this product is something that you need to have an in-depth understanding thereof in order for you to actually participate in the markets in the truest sense. Now, again, we can take shortcuts, we can learn the ropes here and there and try and figure out the rest of it, but that's where those battle scars come back, right? That's where they come back into the fold. And when you're looking at dealing with complex products, you have to face the reality of the fact that they're not for everyone. And again, whether that comes down to the trading psychology, whether it comes down to the inherent born-to-trade versus made-to-trade conversation we had as well, that is a completely separate debate. Some things are not for everyone.
But, you know, I've seen, you know, people from all walks of life be successful with trading. I mean, a 16-year-old student in high school to a doctor and someone who's, let's say, with a higher education. So I do believe that with the resilience, as you said earlier, that most people can find a way to at least be successful and navigate it despite its complexities.
So in saying it's a complex product, I'm not saying people shouldn't try it. I'm not saying we shouldn't learn about it. We had this conversation. We spoke about, can these skills be taught? And yes, I fundamentally believe you can teach anyone from any walk of life with any previous historic background how to participate in these markets. But again, it's what it is you are teaching them. It is the skill set you're imparting and how you're imparting that skill set. Are you teaching somebody how to understand the financial world for the sake of understanding the world or for the sake of making a profit on a Monday? Those are very different conversations to be had.
Well, with that being said, for those who are listening who are just starting out, what would you say is the most important mindset to adapt for navigating both the highs and the inevitable challenges of trading? This is for the new traders.
We spoke about resilience. We touched on discipline in our first chat as well. I think the most important thing to embrace is that in this dynamic world, and by dynamic, I mean ever-changing trading landscape, embrace that you can always learn something. If you take that to heart, you'll always be looking to learn from your experiences, to not let the battle scars discourage you, to not make rash decisions, to improve and constantly develop yourself, whether it's to be a better trader, whether it's to be a better market participant, whether it's to just be able to be a better analyst, always understanding that there's opportunity to learn and opportunity to grow.
Valuable insights, because again, a lot of times people will focus on learn more tangible things, you know, technical analysis, fundamental analysis and whatnot. But definitely, I believe that from my experience that, you know, the emotional side of trading and the, you know, these type of things are very underrated and not discussed as much as they should be. With that being said, thank you, Jimmy, for sharing your expertise and insights on how fast execution impacts trading strategies and outcomes. It's very clear that speed is not just about moving quickly, it's about making informed, confident decisions in real time. So we appreciate you coming and being here, and it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks again for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure.